Welcome back, everyone, and good morning. We're speaking with Nick Pope about the British X-Files just released. Nick, it's 8 o'clock in the morning over there, so it was probably time for you to get up anyway, right?
It was, yes. And by the way, I'm taking the opportunity in the breaks to just dash off and get some more black coffee. And I just thought I'd share with listeners for no particular reason, but it's a holiday weekend here too in the UK. And of course, that means it's absolutely bucketing down with rain here.
What's the holiday? I'm sorry, I don't know.
It's one of our, as we call it, a bank holiday. It's just one of our days that we have Mondays off.
That sounds pretty darn good.
It is good, but like I say, it's absolutely bucketing down with rain, so that's not good.
We're speaking about the release of these files. Why gradually? Why not all at once?
It's because it's such a big job to redact the files, and this is, of course, where the conspiracy theorists really have a field day, but under the Freedom of Information Act, there are all sorts of exemptions covering things like defense, national security, information relating to intelligence matters, even personal data, of course. That's a big exemption. Names and addresses of witnesses. If you report a UFO to the Ministry of Defense, your personal data is, of course, protected. So before any of these files are released, somebody has to go through them page by page, line by line, word by word, and anything that falls under these exemptions has to be blacked out. So it's a massive job because, as I say, in just one of these files, there can be over 450 pages of information. And in all, by the way, there are 160 files. So that's why I say with 450 pages each, we are talking tens and thousands. So what we had last week was 8 pages. 14th of May it was that these were released. So we had 8 files. As I say, 8 out of 160.
This so is it'll take years. Year.
It's yeah. A four-year program.
Did you ever see any interaction with U.S. authorities? Before I ask that question, I should point out that the reason that conspiracy folks here in the U.S. would have questions about freedom of information is because the act as written here has been so terribly abused, in particular about the UFO topic. I mean, American authorities have used all sorts of excuses to hide stuff, to redact huge chunks of these files. So, you know, there is at least some foundation for the suspicion in this country, although I'm not sure how your Freedom of Information Act works over there.
Well, I mean, yes, of course, as I was saying, we have redactions too. And I mean, one of the big things, particularly if you're getting into sensitive matters that is redacted, and quite legitimately, is methods and sources. But having said that, to go on to your specific question about the U.S. authorities, no. When we asked, I mean, that was one of the first things that I did on my tour of duty. I thought, well, I better establish contact with my opposite number in the U.S. So I attempted to do that, but we got the party line. No, we're not in this game anymore. Since Project Blue Book was closed down, that's it. So if there's something going on in America, and I take no position on that because I have no knowledge of it. If there's something going on, they're not sharing it with us.
Did they ever come over and ask for your stuff? Say, hey, can we poke through your files and look at this case?
No, they didn't. No, that never happened.
Huh. Any other country? Any other country like France or Russia or anyone like that that wanted to see what you had in your files or had an exchange program?
No, it was surprisingly and depressingly national. I can only think of one occasion where there was anything which I would remotely categorize as liaison, and that was to do with the sightings in Belgium in 1989 and 1990. Now, because of suspicions that whatever was seen over Belgium then might have been in UK airspace, and because of similarities between the object that was seen over Belgium on particularly 30th and 31st of March 1990, and a case that we had in Britain, which I'll perhaps come on to later. Because of those similarities, I consulted our air attaché and the British Embassy in Brussels, and I think they spoke to the two F-16 pilots who had been intercepted, who scrambled on that occasion in Belgium in 1990. They spoke as well, I think, to General de Brouwer, General Wilfred de Brouwer, who at the time I think was a colonel, full colonel, who was the Belgian chief of staff in the Air Force. So there was liaison over that, but that was really the only case that I can think of on my tour of duty.
How about something like this? Did you ever have an indication that we, meaning the Americans, were flying something over your country? We needed your permission or wanted to give you an alert, and with the knowledge that some people might interpret it as a UFO?
No, that's not really an area that I can discuss in detail.
Okay.
But we had a full, obviously, as all countries do, we have a system of so-called diplomatic clearance, where if you want to fly something, you ask permission. Now, in the early 90s, there was a whole controversy here in the UK about whether some of the UFO sightings that were seen, particularly over Scotland, could be attributable to a secret prototype aircraft codenamed Aurora.
Right.
We had that controversy. It was even raised in Parliament. But we sought and received assurances on that, and that whole mystery is unresolved.
Well, I definitely want to ask you more about that, because the Aurora was supposedly based right here in Nevada. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Stick around for more of Nick Pope on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're speaking with Nick Pope about the British X-Files. Nick, you just mentioned before the break about Aurora and the controversy that erupted a couple of years ago. A lot of folks were seeing something strange in the skies over Scotland. A lot of folks were seeing them here in Nevada as well. And there was a suspicion that some sort of advanced plane, perhaps a replacement for the SR-71, was being flown and based here. What do you know about it? Do you think it was real? We are speaking with Nick Pope, guy who is trying to tell us about the real British X-Files, and waiting for him to get back on the phone. According to Nick and his website, he said that each year the Ministry of Defense received about 200 or 300 UFO reports. Some were busier than others. His job was to investigate these reports in an attempt to see whether there's any evidence of a threat to the United Kingdom. He acknowledges that there were cases where these things were seen over British military bases, in particular the famous Rendlesham Forest case, including the Bentwaters and Woodbridge air bases. And he acknowledges that there were threats to civilian aircraft as well. At least as what we have learned so far about the British X-Files is that Britain's Ministry of Defense didn't take it much further than that. Do we know if Nick is coming back here yet or not? Okay. One of the things that he mentioned just before the break, which I referred to in my question, was this plane Aurora. And I don't know if you know much about that, but Area 51, the base here in Nevada, has been the location of choice for the last 50 years or so for top secret projects. And one of the ones that was mentioned all through the late 80s and early 90s is this thing called Aurora, a possible high-speed Mach 6 replacement for the SR-71. A lot of folks would, I guess it could be, it would set off earthquake sensors when it would fly in over the ocean, over the Pacific Ocean, and across the California and across the desert to Nevada. And a lot of folks, when they traced that thing, it looked like it was heading for Area 51. At about the same period of time, people were seeing something very much like that in the skies over Scotland. And I hope we're going to get Nick back to see if he will discuss that with us. Anyway, we're still waiting. One of the things that he was mentioned before, supposedly going under the term the real Fox Mulder was the name a lot of people have given him, is the effect that that American whistleblowers have had on the whole disclosure issue. In particular, he's mentioned in his writings former Colonel Philip Corso, who had claimed that the so-called Roswell incident from 1947 did involve the crash of a UFO. As you know, as many people have discussed on this program before, Colonel Corso claimed that he'd seen these bodies, the alien bodies, that his job at the Pentagon involved finding ways to use technological secrets that were taken and learned from the crash debris of these alien craft and then sort of filter them into American industry. And obviously, I don't have to stall much longer if we know that Nick is back. Are you there, Nick?
I am back, yes. I don't know what happened there.
Thank you. My heart skipped a couple of beats there for a moment. We were talking about Aurora before the break. Can you tell me what you know about Aurora? Do you think that was a real plane and that's what people were seeing over Scotland?
I don't know. The whole issue of prototype aircraft and UAVs isn't one that I can go into much detail about for obvious reasons, but in generic terms, I can generally say that A, we know where we fly our own kind of prototypes, and B, there is a diplomatic clearance process in place that if allies wanted to test something, again, there would be channels to go through. So we can kind of eliminate those possibilities. My feeling was that these sightings were not attributable to any prototype aircraft or UAV, but the whole Aurora issue, of course, generated all sorts of conspiracy theories. It was even raised in Parliament here, but I, as far as I'm aware, the British government sought and obtained assurances from the US government that, there was nothing being done outside the normal channels there. And that's about all I can say on that.
Well, you know, a lot of people in the across the world, not just UFO conspiracy buffs, but a lot of people see the U.S. as the ultimate bad guy in this. And that's why I asked you the question about whether there was interaction with the U.S. government, maybe at some higher level or something, some exchange of information, because we just know how. And you, since you've got into the field and have been writing about it, you've seen some of that evidence or information yourself about the unwillingness of our government to come forward with what its files contain.
Well, as I say, all I can really say is that I tried to establish contact with an opposite number, and I was told, no, we're no longer interested in the issue. So if there was something going on, I don't think it was being shared with the UK. And if it was, it was behind my back. But you see, that I mean, that's the interesting thing. Unless literally somebody was breaking into the office, you know, in the night and going through the files, they wouldn't have had access to our material. Of course, I can't prove that that wasn't happening. But, you know, I can say that to the best of my ability, it wasn't.
Back to the files. Anything in there that pops out at you in terms of threats to air traffic, where there were close encounters, where near misses, near collisions, things like that, over British soil?
Yes, two cases spring to mind. I mean, the one that was most memorable was a case where a commercial airline pilot saw something flash past the aircraft about 1.5 nautical miles from the port side. And in an attempt to be rational about it, he said, I can only conjecture that this was A, an asteroid, B, space debris re-entering the Earth's atmosphere, or C, a missile being test fired. And of course, because this was in a commercial flight path, he said, if the answer is C, he said, my crew and I are not impressed.
Well, here's where I'm leading, is if there are cases where there is a legitimate threat from some unknown aircraft to regular air traffic, jetliners, if there are cases where there's a legitimate national security concern of unknown aircraft flying over military bases, isn't it possible that some level, even though, you know, at some level, somebody decides to do something with that information and figure out what they're dealing with?
Yes, I mean, of course, it's possible, but it's difficult to see where, after you've done these detailed investigations, it's difficult to see where else you can take it. It's what I described earlier as the catch-22. You do your investigation in the cases where you don't find a conventional explanation. These 5% of unknowns, really, it's the way I characterize it, is it's like an unsolved crime on a police file. It kind of sits there as unsolved, but until and unless some new piece of information comes in, there's really little you can do with it apart from saying, yeah, this is interesting, and maybe there's something more to this UFO mystery than just aircraft lights and weather balloons.
Well, and maybe it's somewhere along the line that your government and my government looked at the information and said, well, this could potentially be a threat, but we don't know what the heck we can do with it anyway. We can't, they fly circles around anything we have. They act with impunity over our bases. They control our communication system. So we have more immediate threats that we know what to do about. And they just decided to take a pass.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I certainly had discussions along those lines with colleagues in the defense intelligence staff. And we said, well, you know, we don't know what these things are. I mean, I remember one surreal meeting I had with a colleague in intelligence. My boss and I went in for a briefing. We were having a meeting. There was a particular photo of a UFO that we had, a sort of metallic diamond-shaped object photographed in daylight, hovering fairly close above the ground. It had been analyzed by MOD, Air Force technical specialists, adjudged to be not a faked photo, a real craft. And I remember my boss, who was a complete skeptic on this subject, by the way, you know, even he was impressed by this, and the guy from the defense intelligence staff was gesticulating, and he kind of pointed his finger to the left, and he said, well, you know, take this. He said, it's not the Russians, he said. He flipped his finger the other way. He said, it's not the Americans. And he said, and that only leaves. And his finger was pointing straight up at the ceiling. And I remember looking at my boss, and my boss was kind of looking up, following this guy's gesture, but no one would say the word. No one would actually say the word, and that was interesting. Occasionally, you would hear people use the phrase "these people." I went to a couple of briefings where people said, "Well, you know, these people can do speeds and maneuvers that we can't do," but no one would ever use a word like extraterrestrial or alien. Never. It was just, I don't know. It was just the extra mile that no one was quite prepared to go. So we were quite prepared to talk about the possibilities, but it was like we were almost scared to actually say it.
You mentioned just a second ago in passing that regarding photos, I'd be really curious whether there were any really excellent photos of UFOs that made it into the files, videos, things of that sort.
Yes, we got some pretty good ones, photos and videos, and the one that I mentioned was probably the best example. I don't know whether those are going to make it into the files, actually. Last thing I heard, the MOD lawyers were still considering copyright issues, because, of course, they're actually copyright to the people that took them, not to the Ministry of Defense. Having said that, that picture, it was the real Fox Mulder picture. That was blown up into poster size and actually on our office wall for a while.
Hold on, Nick. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what's in the files as well as some other matters. Stick around, everyone. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. We're having a conversation with Nick Pope, the British Fox Mulder, speaking about the real X-Files released recently by the Ministry of Defense over there, about where you've got some other topics in mind, including crop circles, which Nick also delved into, the always controversial Alternative 3, whether or not there was a British version of MJ-12, and a lot more. So stick around on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're talking with Nick Pope about the British X-Files. Nick, before we get back to the files, tell me what's going on with you. Are you still in contact with the Ministry of Defense? I'm sure some of the conspiracy folks figure you're still working for them.
Well, I... I'm in touch socially, I guess. I still get invited back into the headquarters building from time to time for leaving drinks, promotion dues, all sorts of things like that. And I've recently done some kind of work for another branch of the government. I mean, I actually, on this file release, the National Archives, of course, are part of the machinery of government. And I've been working with them. They asked me to come in earlier this year to preview the files for them, because, of course, I'd worked on them, to pick out some cases that might be of interest to the media, and to help them through my media contacts to get out the story. So, yes, I've been doing a little bit of sort of work for government, and I'm invited back socially to the Ministry of Defence, but I'm certainly not working, I'm not employed by them anymore. Well, I've got contacts, and I'm still in touch, but it's no longer what I do as a day job.
You mentioned earlier in the program doing a lot of interviews for the last couple of weeks. Is that a sort of an official capacity, or is it just because you're the go-to guy over there on this stuff?
It's the latter. I'm not appearing as an official spokesperson. It is simply because I worked on these files, so fairly obviously, when now they've been released and they want somebody to talk about it, the MOD press office will only give a fairly bland statement. But if they want someone to actually go on to a show and discuss it, or to give a more detailed quote, as you say, I'm the go-to guy. And certainly in the last couple of weeks, I think I've been on about every TV show there is in this country, and a few in yours as well. I am on Larry King Live, for example. The other evening.
Well, tell me this: is there a book in these files? Is that something you're working on? Or are you working on projects to get them out into the public arena in another way?
No, I don't think there's any real scope for a book on this. And in fact, I think it's better to let the files speak for themselves. I mean, let people go to the raw data, let them have a look at them on the National Archives website. Like I say, it's nationalarchives.gov.uk/UFOs. And let people actually read them. I mean, in years to come, I may write another book, but I mean, I've written four books already, and to write a book takes a year, and at the moment I'm too busy on other projects to really do that. At some stage, perhaps, I'll write a kind of official history of the British government's UFO project. Whether I do that as a private venture, or whether I do it actually as a collaborative venture with my old employers, I don't know. But I think there is scope for an official history. That would be one possibility.
I'd look forward to that. As an aside, some years ago in the 90s, I went over to Russia and had some contacts over there with their Ministry of Defense. They had conducted this massive study all for a 10-year period, collecting thousands and thousands of reports, most of it from military witnesses, some similarities to the study that you're familiar with there in Britain. And they shared with me a lot of really interesting information, photos, including stories about encounters between Russian warplanes and UFOs, in which three of their pilots died. Anything like that in your files?
No deaths, but certainly many, many cases involving near misses and fairly close approaches with both commercial airlines and Air Force pilots. There was a senior British Airways captain called Graham Shepherd, who has actually worked quite closely with Timothy Good on getting some information out. He had two very spectacular radar visual sightings dating back to 1967. I certainly spoke to Air Force officers who'd seen UFOs. Some of whom had made official reports, as I mentioned earlier, some of whom sadly hadn't. There was an interesting case in the files from November 1990 when a number of fast jets were overtaken by a UFO over the North Sea. So yeah, we have those sorts of cases, and in some of them, there's radar evidence to back up the pilot testimony too.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago that there are some photos, at least one or two, that are really interesting. Do you happen to know if there's any gun camera footage from the planes that made it into the files?
I'm not sure. I mean, certainly we used to have some gun camera footage, but and again, this has started a lot of conspiracy theories. We had some footage that wasn't stored correctly, and I mean, I'm talking way back. It was stored on 8mm film. There were canisters of it, and the images, the film was unstable and sadly had to be destroyed. I spoke to a former Ministry of Defense official who died some years ago, Ralph Noyce, who had spoken out on the UFO issue. He'd seen some of this gun camera footage, and you know, he'd said that he'd been at briefings with the Air Force where they'd just sit around and watch these things and say, well, wow, we don't know what they are.
Oh, my gosh. tell me this. Now, you said that the next release or some of the future releases deal with the material that you personally worked on. Any surprises coming in that stuff? Anything that's going to make news?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, in a sense, all of these files are going to be broadly similar in that most of the material is going to be fairly mundane, but some will be quite interesting. So in my files, there will be some UFOs seen by police and pilots, some UFOs tracked on radar, some interesting photos and videos, if the lawyers can sort out the copyright issue on that. And as I say, I don't know where it's going. But what we're going to get for the next really 4 years is probably half a dozen or so new files released each month. I mean, it's a rolling program of disclosure. It started with these files from the early 80s, and it's going to go right through to the present day. But like I say, it's going to be 4 years.
Anything in those files about crop circles? And I don't know if the Ministry of Defense mixed the two together as other people have done in the public sector.
Yes, we did. And in fact, there is some material on crop circles in this first batch of files. In fact, it's one of the most recent things in the files. It's something from 1985. As I say, most of the stuff in this first batch is earlier. But it's in fact, in this first batch of files, it's been released the case that first got the MOD involved in the crop circle mystery. And what happened was a farmer who allowed helicopters to train over his land and land in the fields and things, one day phoned up and complained and said, what the heck are you guys doing with my crop? And the army who operated these helicopters said, what do you mean? So they turned up and they found these strange patterns. Then they took a helicopter up. They photographed them. They said, gosh, this looks strange. And they sent it to the UFO project at the MOD and said, well, we don't know where else to send this. You guys see what you think.
And
we were the clearinghouse for anything weird and wonderful.
Do you think that there is a UFO connection at some level? I know, you know, obviously today they have crop circle contests and people brag about making these things. And even the most diehard researchers admit that 80 or 90% of them are man-made. Do you think there is a UFO connection or unexplained connection?
I don't know. I can't rule it out. But I mean, I think so many of these things are made by people, and through advertising, we know that many commercial companies have used crop circle imagery in advertising campaigns, and we know through that people are capable of creating the most complex patterns. So I don't know. I'm fairly skeptical on that. But like I say, I can't entirely rule out some sort of exotic explanation.
Did you ever see a Ministry of Defense connection to any of the crop circle makers? I'm speaking specifically of Doug and Dave, these two old barfly guys who basically claim to have made all the circles all over the world for a number of years, and who many people suspected of being connected to British intelligence or Ministry of Defense.
No, I never saw any connection. I mean, I don't think anyone believes that Doug and Dave created all the circles. In fact, I think even they, if you delve into the archive of their interviews, say, well, of course, we didn't do them all, but others must have followed our lead. But I never saw any indication to suggest any connection with the Ministry of Defense or any other part of the government. I know that, you know, it's been suggested that they were kind of government stooges to defuse the situation and you know, try and portray it as all mundane. But no, they were not working for us. And I, as best as I can call it, they really were what they said, two old boys who like to drink and like to prank.
During the time when you were off the air and I was trying to stretch for time there, I mentioned Philip Corso, Colonel Philip Corso, and I had met him early in the going and before he was a well-known name in ufology. What you had written on your website was that he had his revelations caused some problems to the disclosure effort. Am I reading that wrong?
I'm struggling to kind of recall the quote. There,
Phil Corso had come out and said about Roswell he had seen bodies, that the material from the crashes had made their way into private industry. Are you familiar with?
I'm familiar with the Corso story. Yeah, I'm just saying I'm struggling to recall what I said about him on my website.
I think it's that the release of official files, the speculation that the government's been covering up the truth. I think you used him as an example of unreliable information.
I think I was just making the point. I mean, I really don't know how to evaluate Colonel Corso's information. And, of course, I really can't talk about it with any authority because I had no access to anything that may or may not have been going on in the States. I think I was just saying without judging his claims, I think I was just saying that obviously when somebody says something like that, of course it does call into question the official position. But whether or not his claims were correct, I don't know.
Are you familiar with this program, Alternative 3, that's been hanging around for a number of years?
Yes. I mean, I know the basic story and I think the official line on it is that it was just a hoax program. I mean, occasionally we do some crazy things here in the UK and make an entire hoax program, usually for our April Fool's Day.
Well, I've seen Benny Hill, so I know.
Yeah. Well, even our serious news program. I mean, there was one very famous British documentary program. It was very much the flagship documentary called Panorama. And they did a hoax segment on the spaghetti crop, and they had like bushes with spaghetti hanging off them, and everyone believed it was real. And I think the Alternative 3 was purported to be something very similar. I haven't looked into these conspiracy theories in huge detail, I have to say. I mean, the idea that secret bases and things and an idea for an elite to escape from Earth.
Well, I've seen references on your site that you're delving into other areas, and you mentioned that a little bit earlier in the program about abductees and ghosts and remote viewing, things of that sort. I mean, you are on the ground looking into those kinds of topics?
Yes. I mean, ghosts is an interesting one. People have this idea that ghosts are seen in old churches and things like that. I probably came across more accounts of ghosts on military bases than anywhere else. And certainly I received several reports while I was doing the UFO job. Even the building that I worked in, the headquarters, the Ministry of Defense main building on Whitehall, was built on the site of the old Whitehall Palace. And Henry VIII's old wine cellar still exists in the basement. The building got built around it. So there's this old medieval kind of structure down in the basement, and the security guards, the Ministry of Defense police, the Ministry of Defense Guard Service that patrol the building, some of them have had sightings, and some of them told me, well, we don't go down there too late at night. One of them told me a fascinating case. He said he was doing his rounds, and he saw someone, as he thought, dart out of one door and run into another. and he issued a challenge because there was not supposed to be anyone down there. When he went up to the spot where he'd seen this, there was no door at all on either side of the corridor. And he said he suddenly realized that this figure had walked out of the wall and through the wall on the other side. And he said he did an about turn and went back pretty damn quick.
Anything in the files about abduction cases, any really good abduction cases that popped up and made their way onto your desk?
There were some abduction cases. I tried to collate them into a single file, and there is a file on abductions that's not scheduled for release for quite some time because I think I compiled it in the 1994, I think. And so we're not up to that material yet. There are a couple of kind of supposed alien contact cases in this first batch of files. I don't really know what to make of the one that's been released. It's actually one that I picked out for the media because of its quirkiness. It's this person who claims to have been in physical and psychic contact with a being named Algar, who was subsequently killed by another race of extraterrestrials. I mean, I picked it out just because it was one of the few, one of two alien contact cases in this first batch of files. We do have those cases, but I don't really know what to make of them.
Is there any indication that there were files that existed somewhere else before you came onto the scene or before this information collection effort got going?
Oh, well, I mean, we've been looking at the UFO mystery since the 50s. So there was a huge archive of files that I inherited. But as I say, there was no hint that there was a separate research effort. I mean, of course, I had many, many people doing the job before I did it. And of course, there have been people doing it long after I left. We've had about 10 or 11,000 UFO reports since 1950.
I'm just wondering if there's anything earlier.
Two things, but they tended not to have been collated. So every now and then you can delve into, I don't know, a squadron history, for example, and find what's obviously a UFO report, but before the phrase UFO or even flying saucer was invented. So there are one or two things characterized as unexplained lights, mystery airships. Some cases, of course, during the Second World War of so-called Foo Fighters. There are one or two things that predate the UFO project.
We have a minute or two left before our next break. I wanted you to tell our audience what's in store for you. Sounds like you got a lot of irons in the fire, and then we will open up to questions from our listeners.
Well, I've got a couple of conferences coming up in the States. Maybe I'll talk about those in more detail, but of course I'm going to be talking naturally about the UFO files. The next conference is the MUFON Symposium in San Jose on 24th through to 27th of July. I'm also going to be speaking at the Woods Crash Conference in Vegas in November. But that'll be an opportunity for me to talk in much more detail about these files and for people to come and talk to me about it and question me.
Well, you'll have a chance to talk to me, too, since I live here. And
great.
Get to see you. Hang on, Nick. We're going to open up our lines and let our listeners have a crack at you with questions about the Ministry of Defense X-Files. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM.